This Week in Nature is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for your free 30 days trial at audibletrial.com/TWIA for your free audiobook. Welcome to This Week in Asia, the half-face episode. This is actually, I can't remember, episode 121. And this is actually quite an interesting day because 47 years ago, Singapore got separated from Malaysia. So happy National Day, Singapore. And the other thing is one of our regular, Mr. Rama Rampok from Daily Social, just got a baby. Congratulations.
Yeah, only hours ago.
Yeah, it was a couple of hours ago, a little bit more.
Wow. So Rama's a dad. I can't believe it, actually.
I can't believe he's married.
Oh, you mean he's married? Oh, man, I didn't know. So let's go on the table. The guy with the glasses, only glasses, is Dr. Sukan Toto. Hey, Sukan.
Hello, hi.
And Sukan, you're in Tokyo at the moment, right?
I'm in Tokyo at the moment, yeah. I'm feeling totally comfortable in this situation right now.
Oh. Okay, this is awesome. And the next we have the guy in...
There you go. The next head over.
The next head over, Smitty. Hey, Smitty.
Hello, hello, hello. How is everybody?
Good. And you are having... alien landing pretty soon?
The alien should be landing on Tuesday.
Tuesday? Yeah. Wow, that's pretty fast.
Being scary.
What kind of talk is this whole alien stuff?
Yeah, the aliens.
What very... alien? What kind of alien?
Rama's alien just landed, so yeah. We're waiting for Smitty's one.
So yeah, I'm having a kid, and we didn't determine a name for such a long time that the kid got nicknamed Alien. Because if you look at ultrasound photos, you see aliens, right? So so we nicknamed it the alien. We've always called it the alien, and it'll remain that name until we name it. So the alien's supposed to land on Tuesday.
Okay, let me say, this kind of makes sense.
Okay. If you ever see ultrasound pictures, it makes sense, because they look like little aliens.
Oh my God, that's not a good thing, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you really think babies are cute? Right at the beginning, they're not, right?
Not really.
They're kind of ugly. So.
Yeah, it started off as sperm, but no, let's not go there. And on the other side with the big full head, we have Alia from Indonesia. Hey, welcome back, Alia. Hey, why are you showing your full face, man? It's been a while, man. And
what's wrong with that? Oh, you don't like my face? Fine.
No, this is This Week in Nature. We don't show our mouth.
Well, tell you what, Sarkhan's the only one with glasses, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm the only one with the full face.
Oh, that works.
Exactly.
Individualism right there.
Okay, so let's go on. How do I make this thing automated again? Oh, I have no idea, but that's good. Let's go. And
I think we are all we lost all our viewers and listeners anyway up to this point.
We lost them. They got away.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that? I do not know if there's anyone actually watching at the moment. But oh, there are two viewers. Welcome to one of our very rare live show. And tell your friends and don't be shocked that you see like three heads. I mean, three half heads. And
I can go full head just to not freak anybody out if it makes it better. Where do you see that we have two people? No, I haven't shaved or cut my hair until the kid comes. So
okay.
Yeah. So okay. The kid's going to see an ugly dude when it comes out.
Yeah, I don't think that's the first thing that your kid care about. But we can say that something that we care about, not a lot, but something that we do in terms of that is Apple versus Samsung again. Yes, that's this huge there's this like ultra huge court case looking at the curve, like how what's the curvature of the phone and etc. So yeah, recently it was published on All Things D that back in 2010 Samsung has this comparison, the iPhone versus the first Samsung Galaxy S1. Yes, and
yeah.
I mean, do you see the record?
I haven't actually gone through the 132-page report, but I've got some idea. I mean, they did release a couple of pages out, and those are the ones I've actually seen. I haven't actually gone through the whole thing, but I saw a summary of it, and I think I'm pretty sure that's a smoking gun, right? But others are not so sure. Others think that it's possible that they just want to do comparisons, and I think it's, doing comparisons is common, right? But given the results and given the intention, I think it's a pretty clear-cut case. Although, I mean, lawyers are lawyers. They can say whatever they want, right? We'll see. It's still going to be a long way. But, I got to say, I'm a bit biased on this thing, though.
Biased for who?
Who do you think?
Yeah.
Look at the white headphone, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Do we need to compare, like, Aulia has this, like, white headphone going on?
I think I'm actually using some headphones from, like, a Samsung Galaxy phone that I bought for some testing or something. So
all right.
The Apple thing. But, look, I don't think it's a smoking gun, but I think it shows how diligently they were comparing and looking up to Apple, right? And I think so it doesn't help their case, right? But that kind of comparison is not unlike what I've done in some software companies when we're trying to do product comparisons. And a lot of enterprise software companies have matrices like that on every product they're competing with. So I don't think it's that odd, but when you're in trouble for copying, it doesn't help your case, right?
Right. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Sarkar, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. All of these lawsuits, I mean, they kind of just bore me, right? I mean, like Samsung and like Apple, you know, it's like two children. Like, I mean, you know, it's like always with these big companies, right? I mean, they just take joy in trying to shit in the other company's bowl just for the fun of it. And you know, I don't know. I don't know. It just for me, it's not so interesting. It's just like the Electronic Arts versus Zynga lawsuit. I think this is all. You know, I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous in my eyes.
Okay, well, just let's move on to the next story, guys. I guess we don't have much to cover except for the fact that that we had sort of first-hand knowledge that the executive from Samsung was panicky when they saw their kids all using iPhones. So, the next up we have Baidu. Baidu actually fired four people for deleting four of his staff for deleting posts in return for some bribes. And I mean, Baidu is a huge company with like 16,000 staff as of 1st of August, and this is quite a big deal in China, actually. And the bribe range from how much, like 6,000 yuan, which is $940, to 10,000 yuan, which is actually quite a lot of money for this kind of thing. So got anything to add for this story? It's pretty straight cut on this side.
I got nothing on that one.
Neither, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, it's news anyway, so it's something that we should cover. But then moving on to something that Aulia has submitted in terms of Google this morning, did some announcement. Aulia, care to elaborate?
All right, so Google this morning had a video conference around the world over Hangout, naturally. They announced that they're changing Google Search. They're changing Google Search into something that is going to be very, very personal. I mean, in the last several months, or maybe in the past year or so, they changed from I mean, if you look at one search term in one part of the world and you do it, you do the same thing on a different part of the world, you get exactly the same results, right? Mm-hmm. But recently they've changed that into a lot more personal. They've started to incorporate your search results, your history, right? So it'll be a little bit more more personal to you, more relevant to you. That's what they want to deliver. But with this recent change, they actually let you include your email results. So if you look at, if you search on Google, there's an option for you to include anything from your email. So if you look at your flight schedule, it'll come up with your itinerary if you choose it, right? Only if, at this point, only if you sign up, because they're running it as a trial. Eventually, it's going to be default. I think if Google thinks it works, they're going to make it a default search. So your email will be displayed on your search results, but it'll only be displayed to you. Other people will be able to see it. Right? And obviously, it works only when you're signed into your Gmail. Mm-hmm. Another thing is knowledge. What's it called again?
Knowledge graph.
Hey, the knowledge graph. Knowledge graph was something that was introduced in the U.S. back in May, and it was put on live for the rest of the world about a few days ago. I started noticing it on my account about 3-4 days ago, mm-hmm. but they've only just announced it today. I mean, officially today, knowledge graph is available worldwide.
I want to ask you something over there, because I find it quite useful. I mean, personally, I find the knowledge graph quite useful because I've been seeing it for quite a while. What do you guys think, actually?
Have you guys seen the knowledge graph?
Yeah. You haven't?
I have not.
It's a thing on the side of the search where, for example, when you search for someone, then it has a full detail of who that person is and sort of like a small Wikipedia entry and related search relating to that person.
Yeah, it's basically like a little bit like Google Instant, that it just delivers... tries to anticipate what you look for and just delivers the result on the search page, just right on the right side of the bar in my case, on the right side of the search results in my case.
Interesting. I wonder why I don't see it. It's one of those features I haven't turned on.
Yeah, you just have to look for a porn star or something, or a movie star or a music star or something, and then it will pop up.
Saying earlier, Serkan has is the only one with glasses. I was the only one with the full face, and now Smith is the only one who hasn't seen the knowledge graph.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, the knowledge graph is pretty useful. If you look at one search term, and the most likely result will show up as a knowledge graph on the right side of your of the results. It'll show the picture, details, some more relevant search results below it, and it's pretty handy. I mean, it won't replace the full website that you want to go to, but at least it gives you some idea that hey, this is actually what I'm looking at. This is what I'm looking for, and yes, that's the person I want to look up, or that's the location or venue or whatever. And then you can click on that, and it'll take you to the actual website with more detailed results. There actually is a newer knowledge graph version that's going to be rolled out in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. That actually comes up on top of the search window. So when you look up something on Google, you get the knowledge graph on the right hand side, and then you get a horizontal bar on top. Mm-hmm. Smitty, your feed just went all white.
I was trying to mute Speedy's background. Actually, it was just playing around with the thing.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, that's fine.
All right. The horizontal bar shows you a little bit more detail into the results. I haven't actually seen it myself, but on the call this morning, they were showing that some results will show up on top. Say, for example, if you look at famous jazz musicians. Right. It's not specific who it is, so Google will try to come up with several different options for you, and they'll be displayed across the top.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So your search results are going to be based on what everyone else looks for, what everyone else around you, as in geographically close to you, and it's going to be very, very, well, it's going to be dependent on where you are, who you are, what the people around you are looking for. So, for example, the example they give was, if you look at, if you type Chiefs in the U.S., in Google.com, you're more likely going to get the results for Kansas City Chiefs, the American football team, on the NFL. But if you're looking for the Chiefs in Australia or New Zealand, you're going to get Waikato Chiefs, which is a New Zealand rugby union team. So it's going to be very, you know, very customized to you.
Sorry, I don't care about Aussie style football.
No, but I think the nice thing is you don't have to care if you're not searching in the area where it matters, right?
Yeah, exactly. The results will reflect your location, who you are, your friends or people around you as geographically close to you. So it's going to be very, very personal. It's not going to be the big what do you call that? Well, you're not gonna dip your results into just about everything that's available. It's gonna be more relevant to you. In other words, it's gonna be a lot more focused.
Okay. Second, but what do you think? I mean, do you think this is a I like the old Google search in terms of, it shows relevant throughout the web, and now they're trying to dig out what they know about you and get into your life, get personal. Is this something that you will welcome?
Yeah, it kind of sounds creepier and creepier to me, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm seeing ghosts, but also with the integration of Google Now, et cetera, et cetera. And, and all of these personalized search results, et cetera, and, that Google basically, as everybody knows, kind of tracks what you're searching for, et cetera, et cetera. If someday, somebody finds out my Google password, et cetera, I am basically screwed, right? I mean, they have all my information, it's basically everything is on Google. And I'm using Google Docs, I'm using Google Calendar, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, it's kind of getting spooky, but it's also, at the same time, it's kind of getting more convenient, right? So I think that things like Google Now are awesome. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's always a certain shade of, I wouldn't call it anxiety, but a little bit of worry. That's always in these things, but let's see. And also, I'm personally interested in what Google is doing with voice in these this. There are some big headlines again. Google is trying to kill Siri, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm actually looking quite forward to that one as well.
Yeah, the thing about Siri, people have been comparing Google Voice search on the Android with Siri on the iPhone, right?
Right.
And in the next few days, Google's going to introduce the same thing for iOS. So instead of using Siri, they want you to use their version of voice results, I mean voice search.
Right.
And it's going to be, and because everything is all connected, the whole knowledge graph and what else was there? Knowledge graph and Google Now and everything is all linked up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to do exactly what Siri does on Google service. And so maybe if you want to look up your flight details, you want to find out what the weather is right now, or maybe the traffic condition, you'll be able to do that on Google's service instead of Siri if you want. But if you don't, there's always Siri on the iPhone, of course. But
that app will just work on a normal iPhone type of thing? It's just an app and then it goes to their server?
It's going to be in the next version of Google Mobile App. So if you have the Google app on your iPhone, the next update will deliver that. It will have that new feature.
Okay. Well, that'll be quite interesting to look at. I know Google was actually doing a bunch of voice recording over in Asia to get Asian voice. They did it in my old university.
Yeah, they were doing that for the past year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so uh, I hope it's actually better than Syria, or at least I hope it works in Asia compared to Southeast Asia.
Oh,
or wherever.
Right. Yeah, that. The thing about that, right now, all those work only on the English version of Google.com, right? So if you're using Google in Indonesian or in Malay or in Chinese or Japanese, Korean, whatever, they're not going to work, not yet. But Google's working towards that, but right now they're only delivering in English.
Yeah, but you get your English, your Indonesian English slang and your Thai English slang.
Nah, there so, you go. Even, yeah. It. I mean, that's based on...
Sorry,
based on Nuance, right? And Nuance, at the moment, hasn't been able to figure out... Siri hasn't been able to figure out accents automatically. I mean, if you're in Australia, you have to use Siri, the Australian version of Siri, to get Australian results. If you're in Japan, you have to use Japanese to get Japanese results. If you can't speak Japanese and you're in Japan, you can't use Siri because it just won't accept it.
Okay.
The weirdest thing is, well, maybe not weird, but if you're in England and you're an American, you use the English Siri, it won't understand your accent.
Yeah. Well,
for example, if Smitty goes to London and he uses Siri over there and uses the local version of Siri, it wouldn't understand what he's saying because Smitty's got an American accent. And Siri in the UK only accepts British accents. And I hope it's something that that Google's version will be able to address. And another thing is, I wonder if the app will work on older versions of iPhone. Because right now, only iPhone 4S has Siri. The iPad can have it. None of the iPad has Siri. iPhone 4 can have Siri. iPhone 3GS can have Siri. So if Google's app works on all these machines, on all these phones, Siri's going to get left behind.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Okay, anything to add before we move on?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. Okay, so I think we have two more news items in terms of Innovation Work just raised their second fund to focus on online to offline commerce and actually mobile. So Lee Kai Fu's Innovation Work, which is the incubator in China actually, just raised a bunch of money. I think it's 148 million for this second phase, second fund basically, Innovation Works 2, Phase 1. And this is just another trend, I guess, in terms of it's just really hard to look at this. So this is just another trend to just look at how people are looking at COD. Is it going to be obsolete, or do you think China will just evolve, have their own credit card system and get their e-commerce all sorted out instead of how is it going on in India?
It feels like it would have to get there someday. I mean, I'm baffled that, like, even in India and China, like, there's this whole reliance on COD. Like, does that even exist, Sircon, in, like, Tokyo anymore? It's, like, unheard of.
It kind of exists, but, it's just because it's a habit, not because it's needed. You can still pay cash on delivery, but, people have so many possibilities to pay online, so I think that it's still popular for older people, that's for sure.
Yeah, they trust it, I guess.
Yeah.
But this this whole thing of COD is so popular over in India at the moment. I mean, that's causing the next the current e-commerce boom in India. Oh, there, is there something to say just now?
It is, but it's a big fight, right? It's not. It's not making a lot of money, right? It's costing a lot of money to do it, right?
Well, I feel like this is like an intermediary step to pure e-commerce. But how's it like in Indonesia at the moment?
COD was popular up to a few years ago. I think it's still sort of popular, but people have slowly moved on to direct bank transfers. Right, so a lot of people who have credit cards also have internet banking, and what they do is they just pay over the internet. They open their phone or their browsers on the desktop. They go online, they transfer money to the merchant, and then the goods get delivered. So COD has slowly moved towards that, but because gives a little bit more security, and I think there's a little bit more trust between consumers and e-commerce vendors. Although e-commerce is still something that's pretty tricky in this country. I mean, Multiplier's moving towards, well, not moving, they're shutting down the blogs to focus on e-commerce. Plaza.com is having serious trouble with their online marketplace. Mm-hmm. What else?
Are there any numbers out there in terms of like how much are people spending e-commerce around the region, actually?
In Indonesia, to be honest, I have several numbers, and they all don't match. none of them match each other. So I think they have their own ways of calculating, of estimating, and none of them match. I mean, we've got Daily Social did an e-commerce research last year. And we just finished the version for this year. We'll probably share it next week. I don't have the slide available with me to look at right now, but we should be able to see some results next week. It's a collaboration between us and a payment merchant.
Oops. Okay. The other thing. Hello. Yeah.
We're here.
I'm stuck.
We're here.
Okay, my computer is...
My
comp just freeze off. Yeah, so the other thing... yes, I already did that. So I missed out the report. Okay, so the other two news items in terms of one China report that the app downloads for iTunes, actually, so the App Store, makes up for 80%, but only 3% of revenue. And I can't load the article because my Windows crashed.
Let me open that for you.
Anything?
Yeah, that's an interesting stat, actually. It shows you that the Chinese aren't that keen on paying for apps. So,
but Apple's not making their money from App Store, right? Like, they've always talked about iTunes making a ton of cash, right? Like, it's all about the hardware, isn't it?
Yep, it's also...
But they also need to break even on the delivery. I mean, they do manage the network, they manage the server loads. It's a little bit unbalanced in that sense. It's... I was saying, it kind of reminds me of the Android situation, you know? You've got everybody downloading stuff, but they don't want to, or it's very difficult for people to pay on the Android market. Which is why the Android marketplace has a lower revenue average for developers.
So, are you surprised? I imagine not. I'm not surprised with this number, but
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you know, if you, I'm just surprised that so many people are surprised about it. But if you talk with app developers and game developers, et cetera, you know, you usually get the same complaint. So Chinese people are downloading a lot of stuff, but nobody's paying for it. So I have a friend here in Tokyo who's running a video software company, and he told me that he's putting like a freemium version out there, and then people who want all the features have to pay to unlock the piece of software. And he told me that basically he has seen thousands of downloads for his software, but the number of paying users is exactly zero. And so basically, it's virtually like 0%, 0%. And you hear similar complaints for a lot of app developers that are putting their games on the App Store and on Google Play. So it's notoriously difficult to monetize software or games or apps, et cetera, in China. I think that basically everybody knows that.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to the last story. Something by Aulia. I can't load up the last story. What was the last story actually? It was the
Tencent offering traffic exchange with Indonesian and web and Thai websites.
And
I'm not clear on the details. So they actually sent us some sort of a release this morning and told us that they'd like to exchange traffic through the QQ browser and Qt Messenger. I'm not familiar with those apps, honestly. I don't know how they work. Is it something like Opera Mini?
No, these things are... But here's the thing I don't get with this stuff with Tencent. Like, Tencent's only big in China, right? That's the reality. Yeah. And what they're trying to do is get big anywhere else they can, right? And from what I understand, it hasn't worked, right? So they're absolutely massive. So QQ is, it looks like... God, what was that chat thing?
ICQ.
It looks like ICQ. It's actually like everybody kind of knows they copied ICQ to get to QQ, right? And then, but then within QQ, they added news and games and credits and all these kind of things. So for an older generation, the miners saying like the pre kind of Weibo generation, QQ is like the thing, right? And then they kind of went into a browser so that you would have all these like integrated experiences. But it's all about QQ Messenger, right? Which is, you know, really think of it as ICQ plus Yahoo Messenger plus everything else in the kitchen sink, right?
Yeah.
Now they're kind of like pretending that they just want to get big in other parts of the world, right? So they're doing all these things to kind of like make what they have wanted in other parts of the world. But the reality is as soon as you enter this network, it's like using Weibo and you don't know Chinese, right? You're screwed, right? Like it would be like trying to use one of the Japanese social networks and you don't know any Japanese and you're not in Japan. Like, so I don't know why they think this is going to work. And I know they're trying to run around. They talked to Yahoo for a while. They're trying to make a foothold anywhere where they can get somebody to use their stuff. But I don't know why any of the users want it. Like, no one in Thailand wants QQ Messenger. Let's put it that way. So it's a really weird way of them trying to grow outside of China.
Yeah, I think if they want to grow in Indonesia, they should just buy MiG-33, basically.
MiG-33.
I think that one of the reasons why all of these Asian big companies from Asia, I mean, you know, here in Japan, Rakuten and Mobage or DNA and Gree are doing the same thing. So they're going out there, they're going to Singapore, they're going to Europe, they're going to America, they're buying local companies, they're opening offices, etc., etc. I think that a big part of the deal is that, you know, these companies are under pressure because these are all big listed companies, right? And
yeah,
at some point, you know, shareholders will say, okay, what's your growth path for the next 2 to 3, 4, 5 years? And in Japan, you even have a bigger problem than in China because China is a gigantic market and it's still growing. And in Japan, you have a relatively big market, but it's already saturated. So all of these big companies just go out and make all of these deals. But I have to completely agree with Smitty that, you know, also in the case of the Japanese companies, I don't see any big success so far, right? I mean, they're just wildly running around and, you know, trying to put their finger in every pie they see. But some like good strategy that actually makes sense, I don't see in any of these companies, including the Chinese ones. And I think that's also that's another thing that Smitty hinted at. I think that there's a lot of indifference in outside of Asia for these big companies, right? I mean, who cares about Tencent in America, right? Who cares about Tencent in Japan? Who cares about Tencent in Europe? Nobody, right?
Yep.
And
exactly.
This company is basically not needed at all. And from that side, I can't understand it. But I mean, from the business side, from the basically like the corporate side in quotation marks, I think it's unavoidable for them to at least try or at least pretend as if they try.
Yeah, they're going to do whatever they can. That's why, like, these guys took money in MiG-33, and they took money in all these things. It's to try to get a market outside of their core market. But, you know, you go into the Thai market and say, hey, do you want to use this QQ Messenger thing? And everybody looks at you like, and then you got guys like Line with 50 million users who don't even try to get Thailand, right? Like it makes no sense, right? It's goofy stuff, I think, but...
Oh, well. So let's take a break then. And when we return, we're going to talk about Asia Radar and upcoming events. But just like to take this time to just thank our sponsor, Audible. Audible, you can get a free audiobook, one credit at audibletrial.com/TWIA. Haven't been actually following up in audiobooks, actually. But, I mean, there is... about 100 over 1,000 various audiobooks from stuff that you might not want people to know you are reading, like 50 Shades of Grey, Bernard Leung.
Oh, that's painful.
I mean, if you're interested in Hunger Games, or if you're following up with Game of Thrones, it's all available there. I mean, it's one of the best way to multitask while you're doing something that doesn't require you to actually pay attention. You can just listen to audio while you're commuting or etc. So that's if you like a podcast, if you like stuff, go to audibletrial.com/TWIA. We'll thank their support for the show. And the next segment is Asia Radars. And who wants to go first?
Asian radars. I don't have an Asian one, man. Why does it always have to be an Asian one?
Maybe it's something to do with the fact that we're this week in Asia.
Well, that's true. But aren't we about, like, interesting things that might, like, come this way? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, well, if you want to, but I think Sarkhan has a pick, actually. So,
Sarkhan, go for it.
Oh, yes. So if I may start. So I recently visited a company here in Tokyo, which is trying to do something very interesting. And this is they're trying to build a combination between Crunchbase and AngelList for the Asian market.
Oh, that is cool.
And so they're trying, basically it's a Tokyo-based company. It was recently established. They have a couple of good advisors. They have a little bit of venture money, et cetera, et cetera. So those guys are starting off in Japan. After a few weeks, I think they now have 2,000 people and 200 companies signed up. And it's very, very easy to fill out your form, et cetera, et cetera. So they want to start off in Japan, but they are very aggressive. At least this is what I gathered from talking with them about the Asian market. So because, obviously in Japan you hit a ceiling very, very quickly, but outside of Japan there's a big market waiting for them. So they want to go to places like Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, et cetera, et cetera, to basically build this platform that I just described.
The company is Crew, right?
C-R-E-W-W.
Yeah, the name is very interesting. And I also learned from, what's her name?
Kozue?
Kozure? I learned from Kozure in terms of the founder has been really active in the startup scene. I think this is his third company that he has founded.
Yes. So he's basically an experienced...
That's still
Yeah, I'm seeing two Smitties now.
Yeah, I didn't do that. My thing crashed. My thing crashed and rebooted.
Oh, okay. That's why you look like a deer in the headlights.
Okay, now sorry. Sarkhan, go ahead.
Yeah. There can be never enough Smitties, right? So
no, and I wish I could clone myself this easily.
Yeah, this is awesome, by the way.
Unfortunately, the other Smitty is just.
It's gone.
Okay.
Oh, it's gone.
Google figured its stuff out. Yeah.
Google cut you out.
Yeah. And what is the name of this company? I missed it.
It's called Crew, C-R-E-W-W.
C-R-E-W-W.
Yeah, it's really awesome. In fact, it does look a bit like Google Plus. Certain part of it. Yeah, .com.
Dot M-E.
Is it .me? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
.me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's available in Japanese only at this point, but they are preparing an English version. And the founder, which is what we just talked about, the founder is he has built companies in America when he was a student over there. So he's fluent in English, which is not really probably a lot of you will know given in Japan. So he speaks English fluently, and he has also a company in the Philippines. And as far as I know, both of these companies are still running. So I think that they are in a good position, especially in Japan, especially with their team of advisors and investors that are actually doing some hands-on work, as far as I've seen.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
So, but I think that something like Crunchbase or AngelList for Asia is definitely needed in Asia. You know, to have like kind of like a glue type system for all of these companies.
Didn't E27 try to build something like this a while back?
Still trying to. Like, it kind of is there, and then they talked about working on it more.
I mentioned that to the crew guys as well. But they told me that, you know, they have one advantage, and the advantage is that they are venture backed. You know, they have a little bit of money, and this is their core focus. So they are not interested in doing any journalistic work or blog work. They're just trying to build this product and nothing else. And they told me about basically this is their advantage.
Yeah, E27. It's startuplist.e27.sg, and it basically looks like a Crunchbase template. Well, my understanding was they were going to kind of like work on this again, right? So,
yeah. But I think it's not so trivial as it sounds, right? I mean, it's. I think that you need. Smitty's gone again.
Yeah. We'll just proceed.
I think that it's not as trivial as it sounds, right? I mean, you know, getting people to sign up for this kind of, or getting companies to sign up for this kind of service. Yeah, you're back again.
I guess maybe Daniel's doing it as a joke because he's the moderator here, but I keep getting...
No, I'm not, man. Come on.
Suddenly it just says I'm out of Hangouts, and then it restarts. It's really
I don't even know how to kick out people. Oh, okay, I found it, but yeah.
Yeah. Don't learn how to do it now, okay?
Okay, fine. So that's quite interesting. I'm actually checking out. And I think in terms of crew, they do have some English translation. I see there's a language tab over there. And you guys should check it out. CREWW.
Yes, I think the translation is partly done.
Yeah, they're partly done. .me. So, okay. Alia, anything to add?
The other thing for this would be Facebook. What is it? World Hack?
Not events first, but we'll talk about the events later.
Oh, sorry. All right. No, nothing to add on at this point for this one.
No, so there's no interesting startup or interesting trends in Indonesia that caught your eye? Well, besides Rama having a baby, which...
Actually, if you're talking about interesting stuff, Ice House and Merito Labs are doing interesting things. Well, looking to be doing interesting things. They're doing something that not a lot of other developers here are doing. I mean, thanks to their Yahoo bringing a guest, Smitty. They're probably the ones with the most experience. They've got the Silicon Valley experience as well. They've been dealing with something that most startups here haven't got around to. So, what iSoft is doing right now is development for Silicon Valley and British companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's gonna raise a lot of the quality of apps coming up in Indonesia. It's gonna attract attention from US and European companies to take a look at Indonesia as a development base. I mean, this morning Smitty was talking about how it is a loss for Yahoo to have the entire corporate team kicked out, but it's a net gain for the community locally as a whole. Because now you've got these people with a lot of experience to be able to do something more and attract, call out and tell the world that, hey, we've got pretty decent engineers over here, and our rates are also competitive. Why don't you give us a try? You know, rather than having to source out development to places like India or China, Indonesia becomes another alternative. Mm-hmm. So IceHouse is starting to do that. Meritor Labs is trying to reboot Corporal, but we'll see in about a couple of months.
Okay.
So I think IceHouse is going to be a new spearhead, which is funny because Corporal was seen as the, you know, as the beacon of Indonesian startups, like the like some sort of huge achievement, right? When they were acquired by Yahoo, but now that they've been released, the former Corporal team is actually doing something more interesting as well. So it's almost like it circles back to the same team again.
Okay. I mean, you know what's hilarious, and this is the part that I couldn't really talk about when I was at Yahoo because people just didn't understand it. Was, you know, Corporal was never about just Corporal the product, and everybody wanted to make it that. What IceHouse is today is essentially what we wanted to do with the Indonesian team, right? Which was to create another development capability in a new part of the world that we thought was growing, which is Southeast Asia. And if you looked around Southeast Asia and thought about where you would put engineers, you know, Singapore is just really expensive, right? And then if you look at the other places, Vietnam, it's really not an option because everything that you get coded up there as a foreign entity, essentially the government could come in and take your code if they wanted to. Surprisingly, Indonesia has some funky rules too that a lot of people don't get into, but a lot of corporations actually have kind of a kill plan for if the government wants to get into Indonesia to evaluate something. We have this plan with Corporal, and the kill plan is we cut off their network and they're not allowed to log in, so that anything that they have is of their own volition, but everything that Yahoo has lives on a server and can't be touched by the foreign entity. So Indonesia is not quite as free and open as everybody wants it to believe. But if you look at the kind of the countries where you would do this, there's not too many, right? You could basically say it's the Philippines and Indonesia. It's not going to be Cambodia. It's not going to be Laos. It's not going to be, you know, it might be Malaysia for some people, but a lot of people don't feel like there's enough technical, you know, the country's not big enough to offer enough. You know, if you look at Indonesia, the size of the country, and you look at how the universities rate, they rate quite high in Southeast Asia, right? And then the other thing you look at is there's a prevalence in Southeast Asia to use open source, which is very different from Malaysia and, say, Vietnam, that's very Microsoft-centric. Mm-hmm. So, you know, long story short, Corporal was, yeah, we got this product, but we also got this team, and we got capability in emerging markets. So what IceHouse is doing today was basically what the plan was for the team. Somehow, you know, whether it's Scott Thompson or whoever else, woke up one day and decided cutting a lot of things would be the way to make Yahoo look better, right? And, you know, I'm not saying Marissa would have a different opinion on the whole thing, but the funny thing is a lot of the executives that were still there with the playbook, we're all very shocked that this happened. Like, no one could quite understand why you would get rid of a team of 20 or 30 well-trained corporate engineers who understand product development and just send them onto the street. It makes no sense, right? So what they're doing now is kind of like what they could have been doing with Yahoo if Yahoo didn't have their head somewhere, right? That's the way I think of it. So... and it's good. You know, I actually think these guys have, come full circle. They have an exit under their belt. They got their name back, and they get to go back to doing what they want to do. It's kind of like, you know, they kind of got it both ways, right?
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. The ex-Corporal guys are, well, they're out on top, you know. They got out better than Yahoo did, I guess.
I think so. I do, yeah.
So, Smitty, you were saying about some trends that are outside of Asia. So, do you want to elaborate?
Say that one again.
No, sorry. You were saying that you were complaining that why is it has to be Asia, and you were saying that was
No, because I just saw a really cool app that I just and I think other people have seen it. This burner app, have you seen it all year? Yeah.
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was, really, nifty idea. So it's just kind of cool. It's called Burner, and it's an app in the App Store. And what it allows you to do is you have to pay for the app, a couple bucks, but it gives you disposable phone numbers that ring your phone.
And then you can control how long you want the phone number to be around. And you can change the numbers. You can get multiple versions of it. And then you can buy minutes on them, the whole thing. And then you burn them. If you don't want the number anymore, you just burn the number and it goes away.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So it's just came out, I think, yesterday or something. Called Burner.
Can you use it internationally?
So not right now. And I think it's because it's tied to, like, getting minutes and airtime in America and stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
I'm pretty sure, you know, the guy's an ex-Yahoo guy, this friend of mine that's built it. I'm pretty sure he has global aspirations, right?
That sounds awesome. You know, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. Like, you think of it for, like, PR people, or you think of it for, like, you sell something. You say, like, yeah, here's the number to reach me on for this thing that I'm doing. And when this thing's over, I kill the number. No one comes.
I was thinking of girls, actually.
Well, yeah. So supposedly already it's being massively used for, like, singles and want ads and for, you know, other transactional type things. Like,
yeah, I think so. I think it's really useful. It sounds really useful.
Yeah, like, and what they're saying is, like, you put it, you're on a dating site, and that's the number you give for that dating site.
Yeah.
Or you give the number to a girl that you're dating, and when you're, like, this isn't working out anymore, you burn the number, right?
I will use that.
You know what? This unfortunately, this also brings up a security issue. You know what I mean?
In what part?
Terrorism, for example, or organized crime.
Yeah, so I mean, he definitely states, like, in the whole thing that, you know, you're not supposed to use it to do that stuff. That doesn't mean people won't. He does state that, remember, like, it's not magic what's going on, right? It's a phone number put out there that then routes to your number. So they know at the end of the day the calls that are being routed to your phone. And they actually have history on how those work, right? And what they're doing is that's all private to them, and they're not going to save the data, but they have a window for saving it for legal purposes. So, you know, I don't think people should run out and think, I should do illegal stuff with my burner number, because they'll be able to subpoena burner and figure out who it is, right? So, yeah, but, yeah, you know, no, your date's not going to do that, right?
Yeah, you know, isn't buying, like, if you go to the U.S., isn't buying, disposable prepaid phone for $10 and, some sort of a credit for another $10, isn't it the same basically? I mean, you can also do bad stuff with prepaid phones all around the world, can you?
Exactly the same thing, right?
And actually, you can do bad stuff with the prepaid stuff, and you might not even know who the number is. This is actually, in theory, less private, because they know where they're routing the number to, right?
I think there's a company in Malaysia that does this kind of routing, but you can't burn the number. It's basically what they do is call forwarding when you are traveling abroad. It's called FlexiRoam. So I guess it's something that people can implement, but yeah, I would want to use this, man, just for so many other reasons. Like, every single business card, I would give one number or something like that.
So you'll know who's calling.
Well, on my side, it's actually based on the hacking done by done on Matt, actually. I just like to recommend a site called PassPack. It's actually a free online password manager, cloud-based. And, if you have not changed your password, or if you actually maintain a password in that is similar in every site, just change it. I know a lot of people in Asia tend to have very simple password that are not sophisticated, mainly like 1234 or ABCD or your name or something like that. So try to get a password manager to just change this. Okay. And lastly, we'll go to events. Facebook, Aulia.
Yeah, Facebook's got Facebook developer World Hack Series. The company is sending a bunch of engineers on a 12-city tour around the globe. So it's going to be Austin, Mexico City, Barcelona, Vancouver, Warsaw, Sao Paulo, Buenos Aires, Berlin, Taipei, Jakarta, Bangalore, and Moscow. Now, it's interesting that Facebook's World Hack in Southeast Asia is only going to be in Jakarta.
Okay.
I mean,
when is it?
In Jakarta, it's going to be on September 13th. Registration costs only $25. And they're not going to tell you where they're going to hold it because it's secret. They're only going to tell you once you've paid and once it's closer to the date, they're going to send you an email saying, hey, okay, so guys, the hack's going to be at so-and-so place. So, you know, get to it, whatever. It's a full day coding. I mean, yeah, it's a full hack day for Facebook. I think they're also looking for engineers. I mean, this is pretty much how they do it, right? They can come individually or with a team, I think. But it's I think it's $25 per person. I'm not sure how much if you're registering as a team, but it's, as far as I know, it's $25 per person.
Okay, that sounds cool. Then yeah. Where can people get info on that?
Let's see.
On Daily Social, right?
Yes. Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Sorry, the link is fbworldhack.com.
Okay.
I missed that earlier. Yeah, so it's fbworldhack.com. You can check out the event there, sign up, the dates, whatever. That's funny. Right.
Okay.
Somebody forgot to put in the full link. Anyway, you should be able to find it at Every World Hack. You can pick your city and you can register there, and somebody from Facebook will be in touch.
So
it's the thing. Hacking has just been something that's really, really popular here in Indonesia, especially in Jakarta and Bandung. We've had Qualcomm having a developer day. We've had Microsoft and Nokia having developer days also. WIM is also looking for talents from here. They recently hired somebody from Georgia to be their developer evangelist, right? So there's a lot of talent seekers and a lot of these hack events.
Mm-hmm.
Companies from the U.S. are looking to Asia for talents, and turns out Jakarta, Jakarta or Indonesia is on top of the list, I guess. There's a lot of developers here who do a lot of coding, who are talented, but they're just not recognized enough because the thing with Indonesian developers is they don't try to publicize themselves. They don't tell the world, hey, I made this. I made this really cool app, for example. They don't do that. They make their app, they put it out, and then if nobody downloads it or if people get it, they don't really make a big fuss about it. And I think once these developer events are starting to pop out,
mm-hmm.
the companies start to pay attention and realize, hey, there's a pool of talents over here. Why don't we give them a chance, check them out.
Sounds cool. So, Smitty, are you going there?
I don't know yet. I mean, I haven't. I'd like to if I have the time and the, schedule to go. But
yeah, I mean, it's a good place. Probably a good place to recruit developers. But I do know there's one event that you'll be going. It's the Lean Startup Machine on the 31st of August in Singapore. Are you heading?
The plan. Yes.
Yeah, that's the plan. Seems like I'll be heading there too. So if I do see you there, then Smitty is going to be a machine. It's going to be a mentor. Going to be a machine. You can head out to leanstartupmachine.com for more details. I think the ticket price are at $250 and is restricted to 50 people. So that is quite. If you want to learn about a lean startup methodology, it's more like an event that you do business validation in terms of validating your business idea before you start building up anything. Then when is the event happening in the Japan South by Southwest? Any news on that so far?
I kind of missed that boat. I'm not really sure. It's not in Tokyo. It's in Fukuoka.
Uh-huh.
Kind of slipped my mind.
Okay, no worries.
Yeah, but I'm most excited about at the moment. I'm most excited about the Tokyo Game Show next month.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's just basically the biggest video game show of its kind in Asia. Mm-hmm. I think they have around 180,000 people. It's a 3 or 4 day event. It depends on if you count the business days or not, and it's just gigantic, and it's awesome.
Okay, all right. So then we have JS Game Asia, but that's happening in November. We'll keep you posted as it goes. So I guess that's all for the show, guys. Thanks for being on this weird Google Hangout thing. Still trying to get used to it. I mean, I need a bigger screen for this to look at the notes and look at the...
How big is your screen? Using a standard laptop screen?
Yeah, I have a 13-inch Mac. I was thinking of getting a new MacBook Air, but a small one. I don't think I can do this now. So, yeah. Oh, well. It's been fun, and it's good to see Serkan's specs, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be a trademark, man. It's like, you know, you get like your...
Probably is.
Every time Serkan is on, he has to be half head.
Yeah.
nothing below the glasses.
Seriously, this showing myself on video like half of my head is a big step for me. I mean, you have no idea. It's I had to convince myself.
I have recording of you showing your full body actually, but.
You do? That sounds kind of shady, but.
I don't think I want to get into that.
Yeah, that was the last time Serkan spoke in a conference. I think that was E27 or something. I can't remember. But
yeah, if the camera is far away, it's okay probably.
Okay, so yeah. It's either very far away or just. But this is cool. So,
absolutely correct.
Thank you guys for joining us on the show. If you want to find more details, you can head over to thisweekinasia.net. Look us up on iTunes. There'll be some changes. We are being added into a few other podcast sites. And we are on Stitcher. If you do not want to download or you want to stream our show, you can actually head over to stitcherradio.com. And they have you just download their app and you can listen to it on your phone and then resume it somewhere else later. And apparently, I guess we're going to be on Google Plus on YouTube pretty more often anyway. So, this has been fun.
Well,
so,
try and get the hang of it. I think it's pretty decent.
Yeah, I need to get the hang of it, but the audio quality...
Better than Skype. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so till next time. Bye. See you guys. Bye.
Okay, see you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.